just kasi kan I'm thirsty.
Oh.
I'm tired.
I don't know why.
Ha. So much better. Hey guys, welcome back to the Creepy Kids podcast. I am Aditi.
I am Anushka.
And we are your hosts. Every single week we narrate some horror stories for you guys. And yeah, it's a lot of fun here.
It's amazing.
Yeah. how are you, Anushka?
I'm fine.
I'm fine?
Yeah.
That's sick?
Yeah.
There's some door banging in the background. Our mom.
Sound effects.
So lately I feel like we have been obsessed with drawings. I am a big fan of mandala art, which if you guys don't know, I'm pretty sure a lot of people
it's famous.
Yeah, we've been drawing a lot. We've been playing badminton, which is another like new sport. Not new sport, but something that we haven't played in a long time. So yeah, that's fun. And yeah, so question of the day for you guys is, what is your current favorite hobby? Whenever this episode goes up, whenever we post the graphic for the episode, if you have listened to it, then go ahead and leave a comment on that post. Okay? Anyways, let's start. So, what do we do for our first segment, Anushka? Can you please explain?
So, we read from a book called Ghost of the Silent Hills, which is a very awesome book.
Yes, very good.
We read stories from it.
Yeah. So, we are starting a new story today. Since these stories are extremely long, we are doing it in parts. So, today's story's name is Horror in a Dormitory. Which sounds interesting. Dormitories are, in general, quite scary. I don't like them. Anyways, also this story is based in Assam, which is something new, most of these stories were based in Shimla and
Uttarakhand.
Assam is a beautiful state in India, and we can't wait to see what happens in the story. So let's begin. I went first the last time.
Horror in a Dormitory.
Dibrugarh,
Assam, October 1966. Upendra Gohin was on Tenterhooks. He marched non-stop on the terrace of his house in agitation from one end to the other and back.
Oh, I love when stories start with like something's happening straight away.
The court notice had completely shaken him out of his inertia.
What is this court notice?
The hearing was due in 2 months. He would have to arrange for a lawyer, prepare for cross arguments, and so on. It wasn't going to be easy. His chances to win the case were as good as the possibility of pigs flying in the sky. He would have to figure out a way to wriggle out of this mess.
Okay.
As per the protocol, his cousin Haridev should have equal share in the tea estate and the palatial house, the property inherited from their fathers, who were brothers.
Okay, okay. So they're cousins. Father,
yeah, I think.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Okay. Got it.
Soon after Upendra had finished his college, a tragedy struck.
Oh my God.
One dark night, both his and Haridev's parents were brutally murdered by dacoits who had the information about a huge sum of money lying in the house.
Oh no. I hate it.
Oh. Upendra was away visiting his maternal uncle and had thus escaped the same fate.
Oh, my goodness.
Haridev was studying in a boarding school. Then, Upendra had taken over the estate immediately and supported Haridev's education.
Okay.
Later, when Haridev graduated from college and demanded his share, he was given a small part of the estate and some money, enough to buy a small house. Though Haridev had clearly felt cheated, he was too soft to protest against his cousin who had supported him till then. 20 years ago, he got married to Himanta, a woman with beauty and brains. Things were fine for a few years, and then Haridev began to put pressure on his cousin for equal share in the house and the Kong tea estate. Upendra kept ignoring him. Eventually, their relationship became bitter. And now, Haridev has resorted to the last option, appeal in the court. Upendra's worry was if Haridev got his entitled share, what would he be left for his son? What would be left for his sons?
Oh. He's only worried about his family, huh?
Yeah.
What about Haridev? So mean. I hope he loses.
Haridev and Himanta had two twin daughters.
They have more children. They should have more money.
Beautiful and smart like their mother. They had recently joined a college in Calcutta. Upendra was acutely pricked by this fact, because all his three sons had turned out to be useless nincompoops. Yeah.
Also, well, Upendra has more. Anyways, daughters kids have more. They are not useless.
He had sent them to the best boarding schools, but none of them could even get past 10th standard. Oh, that's poor. It hadn't bothered him much. He had enough to provide for them. He had taught them the skills of running the tea estate and had decided to give each his separate share. But now the court case was going to change things. There would be waste of time and money over lengthy litigation, which was likely to go in Haridev's favor.
Of course.
Yeah.
Because he cheated. Stupid man.
And that would mean he wouldn't be left with much to bequeath to his son, to his sons, who were used to nothing but opulence. Upendra folded the court notice and shoved it in his pocket. He then stood holding the railing, his eyes absorbing the beauty of his verdant estate in the middle of the picture square.
Just a matter of time before it all fades away.
Rolling hills of Dirgar. But his mind was as restless as an approaching storm.
Oh.
I might have cheated Haridev. I might have cheated Haridev out of his share, but I have shed my blood and sweat all these years on this estate to grow the finest quality tea, and that's much in demand in the Western countries. If I've grown rich, it's all because of my hard work. I won't part with even an inch of this land. How will you do that? The railing vibrated as he smacked for his fist on it. It's all scheming, Himanta's doing. She has poisoned Haridev's mind to claim their share.
As she should have.
Yeah. I'm sure she's the one behind this appeal in the court. She's a real pain in my neck, a T-bone in my flesh. Something needs to be done urgently to teach this woman a lesson.
Yeah.
Upendra's mind was in a whirlwind, desperate to find a potent and easy solution. He would have to strike them, crush them, so that they would forget all about court cases and their shares. Behind Upendra's tightly shut eyes and deep frown, his brain was now cooking up treacherous schemes.
I don't like this man.
When he opened his eyes next, there was a sinister spark in them.
Uh-huh.
A devilish smile played on his lips. His mind had hatched a brutal plot.
No way.
He decided to hit them where it would hurt the most.
Oh no, daughters.
Let them spend the rest of their lives wallowing in pain after losing their darling twins, Salima and Santati. But I will have to be very careful. No one should ever be able to point a single finger at me. He immediately summoned his estate supervisor, Moidul. He had good news for him. He would get a big raise in his salary. Moidul had worked on Upendra's estate for the past 30 years and was now nearing 60. He had lost his... He had lost his wife many years ago and had brought up Udbala, his daughter, all by himself.
No.
Udbala, the wild, lusty girl. What a pleasure she is in bed. Upendra rubbed his hands in delight. Just the thought of it excited him. His extramarital relation with Udbala had remained a secret till a few months ago when Moidul had caught them in bed together in his own house. After the initial shock and embarrassment, Moidul had decided to keep his mouth shut. Why would a father open his mouth and character assassinate his daughter? But he had a choice. He would lose his job if he protested. So willingly or unwillingly, he became their partner in crime. But he was upset. His daughter was getting out of his hand, and he was getting tired of managing her waywardness. Since he couldn't take any other action, Moidul had decided that this was a great opportunity to use the rich and influential man. Udbala had completed her graduation from a local college with poor grades. She had got a lowly paid job in a small school at Dibrugarh. Now Upendra Babu would get her a job in Calcutta. Hadn't he mentioned that his wife's cousin ran a college in Calcutta? This way, he'll be able to kill two birds with a single stone. That's plot in the story, no?
Yeah.
I'm liking this. Yeah. Udbala would get a good paying job and be kept away from this lusty man. Who was likely to spoil her chances of getting a good husband here. Perhaps she would find a suitable man in Kolkata and get married.
Mm.
Ubdala's intentions were no different. Both the father and the daughter had their reasons for catching the rich man in their net. So after Moidul had unearthed their clandestine relationship, he had demanded a fabulous raise in his salary for a good job for Ubdala. Upendra couldn't refuse, but he was no fool. And now that he had received the court notice, it was time to make the duo pay back for every favor bestowed on them. Ubdala, who was working in their relatives' college, would be secretly transferred to the same college where Haridev's twin girls were studying. That shouldn't be difficult. Though he would have to pay her a hefty sum, it would be better than losing money in fighting the court case. Ubdala would now be the savior of his estate.
Hey. Oh my god. Oh. Calcutta, June 1988. So 20 years later, right?
Calcutta, June 1988. Yeah. 20 years later.
Okay. There was a continuous chatter of the animated girls in the college premises as if a huge flock of sparrows had all of a sudden decided to invade the area. The Lady Joga College for Girls at Calcutta, that had celebrated its 30 years of existence the previous year, had opened after 2 months of the summer break. At the gate, there was a throng of SUVs, sedans, humpbacks, cycle rickshaws, and tongas. Parents and their daughters, lugging their luggage, were rushing in as if it was not a college but a train they would miss by being late. There was unreserved tears, especially on the faces of girls joining the host girl for the first time, and casual goodbyes by the returning students. There was a huge crowd in front of the notice boards. The final year students who were to be lodged in the first and second floors of the recently constructed west wing of the hostel building dispersed happily, though not without remarks like, "Thank God we are out of that old eerie building," and "Wonder who's getting the top piece." The second year students trudged towards the east wing a little reluctantly, skating casually, "First and second floors are okay, and I hope no one's housed in the dorm. Not after what happened last year." The principal should have that much consideration. Once the administration lobby was cleared of the seniors, the first-year students stood there uncertainly. They were young and innocent, less assured of themselves than their senior counterparts. It was natural, for they were barely out of school and perhaps had left home for the first time. Shifting their tired wigs from one leg to the other and complaining in whispers, they all stood waiting to be guided. The tired young girls heaved sighs of relief when they finally received the attention of the hostel wardens. They were divided in two groups. One group would live on the top floor of the west wing and the other on the top floor of the east wing. Revati was one of the 18 girls of the last group waiting to be allotted their living space on the east wing of the hostel. "Come on, girls, those who have been allocated the East Wing dormitory," came the booming voice of a hostel warden. "Follow me." Obeying the command, the 18 tired young girls picked up their luggage and crouched behind an elderly lady. "I am Ubdala Bora, your hostel warden. And don't ever forget, I don't spare the girls who disobey me." She's a warden now. She received much attention from the latter remark. What an introductory statement it was. Though complete strangers till now, the girls furtively glanced at each other and an immediate bond was established among them. For in that instant, they realized that they would have to unite against a common enemy. Such was the aura oozing out of the lady. Resentful, harsh, forbidding, and the young girls noted it all in just a few minutes of their association. A short and stout middle-aged woman with salt and pepper haircut, short, fair complexion, high cheekbones, Miss Udbala, would have been a pleasant woman only if she didn't have those small, unsympathetic, piercing eyes and the puckering brows that make the girls uneasy. There was something very abhorrent about this harsh-looking Assamese woman. She accompanied them to the ground floor, the area that was common meeting space of the wing, but refused to go beyond. She showed them the stairs and bowed, "Now rush up to the very top, and I don't want to hear any noise or complaints." She then stood watching them scurrying up the stairs with narrowed eyes and a strange, unexplained expression on her face.
Mm-hmm.
Was it anxiety or doubt? Maybe she is just a sadist. Revati, who was the last one to go, speculated as she slowly climbed up. "Nevertheless, I don't like this strange woman. I'm going to keep my distance from her, and neither do I like this building. It gives me creeps." The east wing of the hostel was a time-worn building in dull grey stone.
Blech.
The original grey was now hidden behind the dirty, greenish, stubborn mildew that was willfully growing on its walls. I hate it. Yeah. I absolutely hate that thing.
Like our building.
Yeah, like our building, literally. A dismal aura seemed to be encompassing the whole structure despite the administration's effort to bring cheer through a well-kept garden around it. This is like my college. The lobby was a large, whitewashed, sullen space with a few red, upholstered chairs and glass-topped tables. But they utterly failed to bring cheer. The narrow, dingy stairs were even more depressing. Am I feeling sad because I am used to living in big modern bungalows? Climbing up three decks of stairs, dragging the luggage along wasn't easy. When Revati reached the top floor, she halted at the door, her nose wrinkled in disgust as an overpowering, stale, moldy smell hit her nose. There was something more unpleasant in the air here. It was cold and unwelcoming. But she was so tired at the moment that she couldn't care less. She badly needed to rest her aching feet and she entered the room, entered the dorm without more rumination. Unlike the other floors that had rooms, the top floor was one large hall. Though the walls and windows had been freshly painted in white and lime green respectively, Revati got an instant impression of having entered some ancient cloister. Small beds were lined on both the sides of the dormitory. Each personal space had the very basics, a small cupboard, a study table, and a chair. The place was blank and gloomy, with wild vibes oozing out from every corner. Revati looked for her name tag and dumped her large tin trunk next to her assigned bed. Removing the airbag across her shoulders, she sat on the bed, rubbing her feet. She roved her eyes around and smiled. Most girls had brought their possessions in tin trunks. Did all mothers think alike? Well, sometimes they do. What a fuss she had created when her mom had bought a metal trunk and insisted that she carry her things in it. "It'll be so embarrassing," she had protested, "as if I come from a poor family. My dad is a naval commander, and what a shame it would be when I carry things in this ancient looking tin trunk. She had pouted her mouth and crossed her arms defiantly. Her mother had calmly advised her, "Beta, anybody can cut through the leather and steal your things.
Yeah.
Thefts are common in hostels, I know. But nobody will be able to steal from your solid trunk. Mm. Remember to keep it locked at all times." Oh, so smart, man.
Mm. That's a good trick.
Yeah, we should do that when we are traveling in cranes. Yes. Cranes are very, very
scary.
Yeah. Once she felt revived, Revati decided to organize her stuff. The other girls were too occupied doing things, and she began to notice them. Right across, a dusky and charmingly pudgy girl had plopped herself on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
She was removing the contents from her trunk one by one and dumping them on her bed. A beautiful fair girl to her right attracted her attention next. She seemed distressed as she sat on her bed, massaging her feet. Their eyes met. "Hi, I'm Revati Banerjee from Jamshedpur. You still tired?" She waved at her. The girl smiled. "And I am Sanya Gohain from Dibrugarh."
Oh.
"Dibrugarh? Never heard of the place. It's in Assam. My grandfather owns a huge tea estate there. My father works on it too."
Hmm.
"Oh, are your feet still hurting? Mine are better now. I wore my new sandals and they gave me shoe bites," she responded with a moan. "I have a soothing antiseptic ointment. Want it?" Sanya nodded, and Revati rummaged through her scarf to take out her medicine box. She took out a tube and then went to help Sanya. She sat with her, gently applying the ointment on her wounds and chatting. An instinct bond was established between the two. Revati found a candid and refined girl. Something came upon her all of a sudden. She wanted to protect her, safeguard her, as if she was in some kind of danger. Why she felt like that, she couldn't understand. And for the rest of the days that they were in this dorm, Revati would not let Sanya be alone. She was to become her constant companion, a sister that Sanya never had. Not having been given any attention, the girls from across called out, "Hi, I'm Nitya Sen from Asanol. Want my help?" Revati and Sanya shook their heads and at the same time waved at her. Then the girls got busy settling down. The sun slowly began to set on their first day at the hostel. As the light began to fade, a strange sadness began to creep in. It weighed heavily on Revati's heart. Maybe she was missing her home, her mom and dad. She would have to get used to living without them. She lay on her bed thinking of them. It's 7:30. "Dinner time, mates," somebody from the far corner declared. "Remember Miss Udbala said if we are late, we won't get any dinner." "I'm hungry." "Can't miss dinner. Come on, girls, let's go," came a response. All 18 girls hurriedly slipped into their footwear and left together for the hostel's dining hall. The moment Revati came out, she felt her spirits lifting. Though none of the girls were chirpy, as would be expected, they spoke in whispers. It's surely dictator Miss Udbala's influence. Revati smiled at her passing thought. This is where we will be leaving. And... oh, interesting. I am so interested.
I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm excited and interested to find out what happens next.
Mm.
And I cannot wait.
Yeah.
I guess this story is, I think it's probably...
it's for us.
Yeah, it's probably one of my favorites from this book. Like, the stacking is really good.
It's quite different.
Yeah. It's, I can't wait.
Yes.
So for the second segment, if you are new here, we narrate two more short stories, which are like a minute or two long. And yeah, Anushka will be going first.
Daddy's home. A man and his young teenage son live together in a small house on the outskirts of town. The lot their house sat on was large and overgrown with tall hedges blocking the house from the street.
Okay.
One day, the man left on an overnight business trip but took his son's phone charger by mistake. As a result, neither the boy nor his father could charge their phones. Both phones were fully charged at first, but the man was delayed on his way home. And by midnight on the second day, both phones were dead. It was just after this that the boy heard a knock on the front door. He was a sensible boy and knew not to open the door to strangers. Instead, he looked out of his bedroom window onto the drive to see who was there. The boy saw his father's car in the drive, but he could not see the front door from his room. He went downstairs and looked through the peephole in the door to see who was there. He could see his father on the other side of the door, looking back at him, and the boy reached up to open the door. But something stopped him. "Dad," the boy called out. Why are you knocking on the door? Did you forget your keys?" The boy waited, but there was no response. Just another knock on the door. "Dad," the boy called out again, "why don't you come in? Why don't you just open the door and come in?" But again, there was no reply. Instead, there was just a steady, rhythmic knocking on the door, which began to get faster and faster.
Oh, God.
The boy's dad was knocking constantly on the door, waiting for him to open up, when suddenly he stopped and there was no sound at all. The boy looked through the peephole again. His dad was still there. So he decided to open up. When he opened up the door, he discovered his dad's head tapped to the door in front of the peephole and a trail of bloody footprints leading down the drive.
Oh no. Shit.
You.
It's you.
Poor father,
yeah. Whew. So frustrating. Anyways, now this story, it's not true. I don't think it's true. But you know, just to scare people.
Okay.
Okay, so do you know why Hello Kitty doesn't have a mouth?
Why?
No? Well, let me tell you. The woman who invented Hello Kitty has a daughter.
Okay.
Her daughter developed a rare form of cancer in her mouth.
Oh.
And the doctors told her mother there was nothing they could do. Her daughter was going to die. The mother was inconsolable. Her daughter was her only child, and she couldn't imagine living the rest of her life without her. She vowed to do whatever she could to save her. When the little girl was just hours from death, the mother was visited by the devil.
Oh.
He told her he would save her little girl if she promised to invent a cartoon character that would end up in every home.
Oh.
The mother was suspicious. Why would the devil request that she created a cartoon character that would bring joy into the world? The devil's intent wasn't to bring happiness into the lives of children after all. The devil said he would use the character to hypnotize children and possess them. The mother was torn. Should she save her own child and sacrifice all those innocent children out there?
Okay.
Because of her intense love for her children, the mother agreed, and her daughter recovered. In return, the mother invented Hello Kitty. The character has no mouth because her daughter's mouth was eaten away by the cancer and sewn up. It has pointy ears like the devil's horns.
Oh.
And the word kitty means demon. So when you say Hello Kitty, you're actually saying Hello Demon and welcoming the devil into your home.
Okay, so we have a Hello Kitty. What
Hello
is it
Kitty
called?
Stool. And I'm scared of it now.
Hello Demon. I use it.
Oh goodness gracious. This is so fun to scare little children, right?
Yeah,
so if you have like small children,
mm-hmm.
7 to 8 year olds,
mm-hmm.
they would be so scared and it
yeah.
would be so much fun. Wow, we are so devilish.
We are bad.
Yeah. We are bad. Anyways, time for a gag joke. I'm not looking forward to it, as usual.
Okay.
I hate it.
What did the ocean say to the beach?
It's going to be something crazy. Ocean said to the beach. I don't know.
Nothing, it just waved.
Thank you so much for listening. I hate gag jokes. Oh my god, that was so dumb.
That's why I love it.
Anyways, guys, thank you so much for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed it, please do give us a good review.
Yeah.
We don't want bad ones.
No.
Only good ones. If you don't like it, just don't review. Just go.
That is so funny.
Yeah. Anyways, yeah. We'll see you in our next episode. Until then, please take care of yourselves. Stay safe and bye.
Bye.
Love you.
Love you. Bye, guys. Love you.